Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-5116, Loma Linda University Medical Center versus Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary, United States Department of Health and Human Services. Ms. Desgupta for appellant, Mr. Fedor for appellee.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Anisha Desgupta for appellant Kathleen Sebelius. Part A of the Medicare statute authorizes the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to make payments to teaching hospitals, including supplementary payments for the costs of medical education that teaching hospitals incur during inpatient stays of Medicare beneficiaries. Appellee, Loma Linda University Hospital, successfully used CMS's procedures to obtain medical education payments for tens of thousands of Medicare managed care inpatient days. Loma Linda did not, however, submit proper claims for the payments at issue in this case, and it was this failure that caused CMS to deny Loma Linda's request for these payments. CMS was not required to substitute a manual examination of Loma Linda's records for the agency's standard procedures. Loma Linda's various reasons why CMS should not have applied its standard procedures are all based on the erroneous premise that the payments at issue fall within a regulatory exception to CMS's claims filing requirement. And the relevant regulation itself makes clear that this exception cannot apply. The regulation, found at 42 CFR 424.30, provides that claims must be filed in all cases except when services are furnished on a prepaid capitation basis. This sets up two mechanisms, and only two mechanisms, for obtaining payment. The first is through prepaid capitation payments made by Medicare directly to a managed care plan, and the second is payments made by Medicare upon the filing of a claim. The Medicare statute itself also establishes that this regulatory exception to the Medicare claims filing requirement cannot apply because Part C of the Medicare statute contains no authority for Medicare to include medical education payments in the prepaid capitation payments that it makes to managed care organizations. In addition to these clear indications in the regulation and the governing statute, the agency, through various publications, let providers know that this regulatory exception did not apply.
But where did the department let providers know about the deadline? The 424.44 deadline?
Your Honor, the deadline follows inexorably from the claims filing requirement because the deadline at 424.44 is a time limit that applies whenever a claim has to be filed. So the question really turns on whether providers were aware that a claim had to be filed.
Right. That's the issue. And Judge Kennedy said that knowing about the process isn't the same as knowing about the deadline. And why isn't he right about that?
Well, Your Honor, because the deadline is part of the process. So the deadline falls within a set of regulations that apply whenever a claim has to be filed. So as soon as a provider...
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable possibility. But our caseload says that the notice, the fair notice means that the regulated party has to know by an ascertainable certainty. And while your theory is certainly reasonable, and Maybe it's reasonable for someone to have thought that through. Isn't it just as, given the fact that none of these documents you rely on cite mention the deadline or even mention 424.44, how can you say that they should have known by an ascertainable certainty that they should have done this? That's the standard, right?
Well, Your Honor, when an agency adopts standard procedures, all it needs to do is put individuals on notice that those procedures apply. So, for example, just in the way that the agency had the time limits, it also had the form for filing a claim, and these are all part of the
ordinary. I want to talk to you separately about the form, the UB-92. That's a different question. I'm only asking you right now about the deadline.
Sure, Your Honor. I think here Judge Kennedy's concerns turned on his incorrect understanding of the statute. He was of the view that there was no notice as to the time limits because he viewed these as Part C payments, and his view was, how should a provider know that Part A regulatory requirements should apply to Part C payments? And that conclusion that he drew was just incorrect. These are not Part C payments. They're authorized under Part A of the Medicare statute, and so they fall within the ordinary procedures for submitting claims for Part A payments. And that's what those time limits are. And I think further factors, as the agency mentioned in its administrative decision, its methodology for making medical education payments was something that preceded the introduction of Part C. And these medical education payments at issue here are not, in a sense, a new kind of payment. They're a kind of payment that the agency was making to teaching hospitals through its standard procedures for a number of years before the Balanced Budget Act. And teaching hospitals were aware of the forms that had to be used in a time limit. And so when the Balanced Budget Act was introduced and the agency explained how teaching hospitals were going to have to claim these payments, the agency noted that the teaching hospitals, it anticipated, would need to submit claims. And in the program memorandum, it actually said, you must submit claims. And so there's no...
That's the internal memorandum?
This is the...
98.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which one?
A98, Your Honor. The program memorandum.
Yeah.
But really, what...
Do you disagree? You don't challenge Loma Linda's statement that they never got that, do you?
The record is ambiguous. The hearing testimony shows that the witness just said she didn't recall having received them.
You don't have any there evidence that they did get it. And you're not claiming that they did. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. Instead, the key fact here is that Loma Linda both filed claims and acknowledged during the district court proceedings that it was aware of the requirement to file claims. And based on the agency's regulation, the statutes and the guidance provided by the agency, a provider that had experience of claiming medical education payments would have been aware that as soon as they had to file a claim, certain other requirements were triggered. And in fact, Loma Linda was able to satisfy those requirements with respect to tens of thousands of other payments.
Say they acknowledged that they were aware that they had to file claims, but isn't the controversy here over how the claims were to be filed? In other words, the fact that they were aware that they had to file claims doesn't mean they necessarily knew they had to do it under Part A within the time limit.
Well, Your Honor, the regulation 424.30 is a regulation that's generally applicable to payments from Medicare. And so once a provider knows that they fall into the world of claims having to be filed, then 424.32 sets out basic requirements for all claims, and 424.44 sets out time limits that are applicable for all claims. So the question is really one of whether or not a claim needs to be submitted. And here there's no dispute that Loma Linda was aware that a claim had to be submitted.
Could I go back to your first point about whether this capitation basis applies?
Yes, Your Honor.
your argument is it doesn't apply because these are separate and apart from per-patient payments. Is that your argument?
That's correct, Your Honor.
That isn't quite what the statute says, is it? In other words, I'm looking at the language where the statute refers to, this is direct graduate medical expenses as payments for services for the individuals enrolled in Part C plan, 1395 WWH3D.
Yes, Your Honor.
So doesn't that speak to capitation?
You're referring to where it says payments for direct medical education costs? Payment for managed care enrollees? Your Honor, there the key statutory provision is actually 1395W23C3B. So the provision Your Honor has referred to is the Part A provision that sets out the formula for medical education payments generally. So payments to payments to managed care organizations that are made on a prepaid capitation basis are governed by a different statutory provision. That provision is 1395W-21. That's the provision that sets up the Medicare Part C program and sets out payments that can be made to a managed care organization. And that provision.
So what does this language I've quoted refer to?
So when the Balanced Budget Act was introduced, this new category of beneficiaries was created. And so that merely says that in addition to the ordinary payments that Medicare was giving teaching hospitals for medical education for Part A beneficiaries, that formula would now be applicable for inpatient days for Part C beneficiaries. But that is not part of the prepaid monthly capitation payments. The prepaid monthly capitation payments, that authority is set forth in 1395W-21, and that provision specifically carves out medical education payments. It provides that medical education payments expenses are not costs of these managed care organizations and cannot be included in the prospective monthly capitation payments that are made by Medicare to those organizations.
I just want to be clear. Yeah. And I find that in this W-20 and W-21, or where?
The provision that carves out medical education payments is 1395W-23C3B. And, Your Honor, that reads the removal of medical education from the calculation of adjusted average per capita cost.
Okay.
I see I'm into my rebuttal time, Lewis, if the court has.
I just have. Has a question.
I want to ask you about the UB-92s.
Yes, Your Honor.
Loma Linda says they couldn't file those because they couldn't get the HIC numbers. What's your reaction to that?
As the agency concluded, if the problem was truly an inability to get the HIC numbers, then...
Well, I'm not asking you any longer about the question of timeliness. I'm asking about the next question. They argue that, and the district court ruled that the department hadn't adequately explained why it didn't allow Loma Linda to use its own logs rather than the UB-92. And one of the arguments they make is they couldn't file the UB-92 because they didn't have this HIC number. And is that true? Can you not file one without an HIC number?
Yes, Your Honor. My understanding is that the HIC number is something that is required for the form. But if a provider is unable to obtain the HIC number, the provider was able to notify Medicare that they anticipated they had a valid claim. All they were lacking was the HIC number. They would be able to file a statement of intent, and that would extend their filing deadline.
No, you keep going back to that. I mean, maybe they didn't file the statement of intent because they didn't know they had a deadline. Now, let me ask you the question this way. This is a hypothetical. assume that we think, that we agree with the district court that the that Loma Linda didn't have fair notice of the deadline. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we rule that, is there any reason why Loma Linda could not then file all of its claims on the UB 92? Even if it doesn't have the HIC number?
It's certainly possible, Your Honor, that Loma Linda would not need the HIC number to fill out the UB 92.
But the record is to the contrary.
Well, Your Honor, the UB 92 form is something that is used for two purposes. When a provider cares for a managed care beneficiary, the provider will fill out the UB 92 form and submit that to its fiscal intermediary to get medical education payments. It will also use that form to submit to the managed care organization. They're separate codes. So here the record doesn't reflect whether these claims were ever submitted to a managed care organization. If they had been, then it's possible the agency would have some means to calculate the payments other than the raw data in Loma Linda's records, but what the record reflects is that Loma Linda offered the agency the alternative of just looking at its lists of inpatients and sorting through those lists manually.
But you can't tell us today that that Loma Linda would not have a problem in filing its claims now if it used the UB 92.
Your Honor, when you say not have a problem.
I realize I didn't ask that question very well. I can't. If we rule that that the hospital lacked notice, can you assure us now that they could file their claims on the UB 92 or not? That's what I'm asking.
The record isn't in a state where I can provide that answer.
But I thought the record was in a state that petitioner tried to find out and file without the number and was told, I thought, by the fiscal intermediary, had to have the number. And if you don't have the number, you can't file the form. So, you know, getting an extension on the time doesn't solve the problem.
Well, here it appears that the hospital asked the intermediary, can we submit these claims, and was told they were untimely. But at the stage where it was before the agency, it offered as the only alternative looking to the raw information in its records. Part of the agency's concern with using the substitute procedure was that the substitute procedure doesn't fulfill all the requirements of the claims processing system, and the UB 92 is part of that claims processing system. Now, if...
How can the department take the position that in order to be paid, you have to file a claim on a form that you can't file a claim on?
Well, here Loma Linda said they lacked the HIC number, but if...
And as Judge Rogers just pointed out, that's exactly what the record indicates, that you can't file a UB 92 without that number. So the department's position is the only way you can get your claim paid is by filing a UB 92, but you concede they can't file one.
Well, they have represented that they were unable to get that information. Now, that's part of the information that hospitals are supposed to collect when they provide service to patients, like any other kind of information.
They could get the number and just file the UB 92.
So the failure to obtain the number was a failure on the part of the hospital.
Okay, I understand now. Thank you. Okay, great. Got it.
Good morning, Your Honors. Frank Fedor for Appellee Loma Linda University Medical Center. I'm ready for your questions, but where I'll begin is on this HIC number.
Yeah, would you start on the number thing? That would be a good place to begin. Right.
Yes. This aspect of it isn't developed in the record, but this is my understanding, is that the way the hospital identified the claims that were not filed due to the HIC number was by getting they have a log of every Medicare managed care enrollee that was discharged during a particular year. And when they printed out that log with the logs of the bill submitted to Medicare for the graduate medical education, there was a difference, a rather dramatic difference. So I'm not aware that they currently have these HIC numbers or that these HIC numbers are available.
Is it, do you agree, though, with council's statement that the failure to obtain the numbers is a failure by the hospital, that it is required to obtain those numbers?
No, Your Honor, and that's part of the record we developed and part of the argument we have is that when a Medicare enrollee elects to go with Part C, that enrollee now becomes covered by a contractor, a managed care plan. It could be HealthNet Secure Horizons or Pacific Care Secure Horizons in California. And then that Medicare enrollee gets a Pacific Care card or a HealthNet card or a Cigna card or a United Healthcare card. And they present that at enrollment, I'm sorry, at admission. Whereas if they're covered by traditional Medicare, Parts A and B, they get what's called a red, white, and blue card that says, hi, I'm covered by traditional Medicare. And at the time, it's developed in the record that right now we're coming on a new phase of fraud and abuse and trying to cut costs in healthcare by cutting away fraud. At that time, fraud and abuse was on its first leg, and people were being told, you don't need to show your red, white, and blue Medicare card. You just show your card from United Healthcare that's covering you under a Medicare managed care plan. And the record is quite developed about the efforts that Loma Linda made to try to get these numbers, surveys, sending follow-up letters.
And there's no requirement that the managed care plan include the HIC number on its card?
That's correct, because the card number, the managed care card will have the unique number that plan has assigned to its customer.
And there's no way to trace through that number to the HIC number?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, didn't Loma Linda file a lot of claims already? You said that the problem is there's a disparity between the claims the hospital filed and the many more appearing on its own logs, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So how did the hospital file all those claims? I assume they use UB-92s, right?
They would have had to, Your Honor.
Okay, and so they must have had an HIC number on them.
Well, they were able to obtain the HIC number from the vast majority of the patients receiving services.
Well, then why can't they get them from the rest?
Because the rest were resistant to giving the number.
Who? You mean the patient?
The patient, yes. And that's what we developed in the record as well, that this was a concern about fraud and abuse.
Okay, see, the reason I'm asking, I think the reason all three of us are focusing on this, at least from my perspective, is that the reason this is important, I think, is that it seems a little bit like, I mean, suppose I said to the Internal Revenue Service, look, I don't want to file the 1040, just here are my records. Right? Nobody, that would be a laughable argument, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So this seems to me to be just like that, unless they're asking, unless HICVA, well, it's not called HICVA anymore, is it?
CMS.
Oh, shows you how old I am. unless they're demanding a piece of information on the form that the hospital, in fact, cannot get. Otherwise, it's just like my 1040. Example. Sure, maybe your logs do show all the information, but who cares? The department has a form. They use the form. There's no court that's going to interfere in that process, it seems to me, and tell an agency that processes millions and millions of claims a year they can't use the form because people would rather just give them the raw data. So at least from my perspective, to make your case on this aspect of the case, you need to convince us or somebody that this information is, in fact, unavailable. And the fact is, you did file, Loma Linda did file thousands and thousands of UB-92s with the number on them.
Correct, Your Honor. Well, there's several different sources where they could have obtained that information. And I think the record is developed that they made.
Well, isn't it Loma Linda's responsibility? I mean, suppose I said to the IRS, look, I use my logs because there's information you asked for on the 1040. I just can't get. I mean, whose problem is that?
It is Loma Linda's responsibility, and I believe the record reflects that it executed its responsibility. At the admission, it would ask for the red, white, and blue card that would have the HIC number. and in many instances it would obtain it. Some of these admissions would have been readmissions, so they would have had a record. Right. Maybe they were under managed care now, but they were under traditional before, so they looked at their records that this was a readmission.
I mean, if somebody just wouldn't give them the information, then, I mean, why would Loma Linda treat them?
Well, the easy answer would be if it's an emergency.
Okay.
Okay, but we'll give up the more difficult
sure,
answer.
If all we're talking about is emergencies, I
no, we're not. No, we're not. I'm just, I went for the easy answer first.
Yeah.
But I think the more involved answer is, look, the person's coming in. Loma Linda has a contract. I'll use United as a name. As the contract has a contract with United. They agree to treat the United member.
Yeah.
And the member has a United card.
Loma Linda knows that in order to get reimbursed, it needs the HIC number. Why doesn't it ask for it?
Your Honor, I think the record says they did ask for it. And when they wouldn't get it, they'd ask again.
No, but was my question about why is it not a part of the contract? You know, United can give out its own card, but its card has to have the HIC number somewhere so that your client is able to seek file claims.
Well, I think the answer, and I don't have the understanding managed care and how contracts are negotiated, the contracts weren't renegotiated or amendments weren't negotiated to them to deal with this issue because the issue didn't arise until after a period of practice.
Okay. Let me ask another question, piggybacking on Judge Tatel's 1040 hypothetical. I thought that we were talking about something a little different. In other words, it isn't as though the hospital said, here's our file room. HHS, come in our file room and you'll find all the information you will need. I thought in effect it's a 1040 form, but it doesn't have my Social Security number on it, because I don't know what my Social Security number is and I can't find it, or, you know, I made efforts, et cetera. It's either that or it's all the information that the form requires, but it's just not on the form.
Yeah, yes, in our record, and it's summarized in our brief. All the information needed to adjudicate these claims is being made available by Loma Linda, but for this HIC number.
But that's Judge Tatel's hypothetical. Right. I mean, the 1040, you tell IRS, just come look at my files. You'll get all the information there.
So you're asking why Loma Linda didn't file UB 92s with everything but the HIC number on them?
No, I want to be clear. I thought that was their position, that essentially they had offered to the agency the form without the HIC number.
Your Honor, I think the record is a little different than that. Ruth DePape, the manager who primarily testified, that these UB-92s are electronically filed and that they would not be accepted without the HIC number.
Right, yes.
Yes.
Exactly right. That's
and now, once the problem was discovered later on, there was an offer for all three of the years, 98, 99, and 2000, but it was developed for the year 2000. Here's all the data you need to make payments, except we don't have the HIC number. And that was rejected as being untimely. We won't accept it that way. But it's not, I know in the briefing for the Secretary, they want to mine their data. The data is on a silver platter, but for the HIC number.
Do you know if any of these claims that Loma Linda failed to bill were actually claims for which they did have the number? Or asking it the other way, is there a clear demarcation between ones that had the number and ones that did not?
That were not billed, you mean, Your Honor? I do not think the record reflects that there were any bills where Loma Linda had the HIC number and failed to bill. I know in the briefing below, Judge Candy, and the references made here again, there's a reference to Loma Linda having the HIC number and not having billed. And when one goes to read the transcript, it's the consultant, Mr. Foss, who's saying he doesn't know that for a fact. But there's nothing as I read the record, that shows that Loma Linda had any claims where they did have the HIC number and were negligent, forgot, whatever, however you want to characterize it, and didn't bill. And of course, they had a self-interest to bill because there was money coming in.
My questions to counsel for the secretary about the statutory claim that you make, you know, the plain language of the statute, this is a capitation claim. What's your response to her response to me that the section I quoted is not the controlling section?
Well, I think the section you quoted, that was 1395 WWH3D, Your Honor.
That's right.
It says that payment is for managed care enrollees. Now, this is the Post-Balanced Budget Act of 97 statute that comes in through that act. I think counsel for the secretary is correct. That payment under the Balanced Budget Act is no longer made on a capitated basis. It's made as it would be under traditional Part A. But I think that's the door to another concept here that perhaps hasn't been developed, which is before this regulation that creates the exception, 424.30, this was promulgated back in March of 1988. And from that time until the Balanced Budget Act, Medicare, for what would be Part C, it wasn't called Part C during that period, but there were capitated payments being made from Medicare to the HMOs, who would then contract with the hospitals. And those payments included both the cost of services and the cost of medical education. So what you have here is actually a 10-year interpretation, until the Balanced Budget Act at least, that this is a payment for services, because if medical education wasn't a payment for services, well, then it should have been excluded.
This was not a new payment. In other words, medical education was always included within these, but the difference is that they separated it out after the balanced budget amendment, is that
correct? Correct. Before the balanced budget, it was paid through capitation, to the HMO. There's a reference in the record that the HMOs weren't sending enough of that to the hospital, so they wanted to make it go directly to the hospital. But that's an interpretation that the regulation 424.30 included medical education costs. So it's not that medical education costs is necessarily a Part A service. It's associated with a Part C service.
If we agree with the district court on the fair notice point, do we have to decide any of those questions?
No.
Okay.
No. If you agree with the district court on that basis, not at all.
The fight would continue on this capitation issue. I just want to be clear.
You're
back before the secretary, and I assume the secretary is going to take the position that counsel took this morning.
Well, I think, as I understand the position, they're saying that the regulatory exception, 424.30, doesn't apply because you can now, before you couldn't carve them out, but now because of the payment that's being made, there's two different things. There's an exclusion for what they call services and not an exclusion for what they call Part A. So the fight would continue, and the facts are all before you to show that regulation was interpreted.
And does it make a monetary difference to your client? That's what I need to be clear on.
No, it doesn't. Whichever way we win, I think we get the same.
No, I understand whichever way you win, but my point is, under the secretary's interpretation, as we heard it this morning, does it make any difference to your client in terms of the amount of reimbursement it would receive or the amount of the payment it would receive?
None at all, Your Honor, because...
So then why is this even before us if it's not a disputed issue?
Why is that before you? So, because we have alternative ways to get to the payment in case you're not persuaded by Judge Kennedy's way of reviewing the case.
Your theory is that if Judge Kennedy's right that there's no fair notice, then you're entitled to file your claims, even if the Secretary's interpretation of the regulation is correct, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so what advice, what do we do? Let's assume we, yeah. let's go back to the UB 92 problem, and let's assume that we agree with Judge Kennedy, that Loma Linda didn't have fair notice, and assume also that we are extremely reluctant to second-guess a federal agency's judgment about using a form that it uses in a system as complicated as Medicare, okay? So what would happen on remand? How would you be able to show on remand that in fact it's impossible to get these numbers and therefore you can't get the claim? Or in other words, what would you have us do about that?
Well, Your Honor, actually Judge Kennedy did remand part of the case.
Yes, I know, it's a broader remand than I have in mind here.
Okay. Well, we would have the Secretary accept the claims without the HIC number.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the easy answer to it. But it seems to me, look.
I always go for the easy
answer. Yeah, right. Suppose it turns out that the failure to get these numbers was, in fact, Loma Linda's fault. Just, this is hypothetical, okay?
Yes, Your Honor.
Then it wouldn't make any sense at all for us to tell the agency that it has to accept your logs instead of the UB-92. It's just your fault. If, on the other hand, they're demanding a piece of information that no reasonable provider could get, then we might have a different case. And my question to you is it possible to even get to that, to probe that question on remand if we were to do that?
Well, yes, Your Honor, it is, because on the remand, there would probably be two aspects to it. One, the identification of the claims that did obtain managed care Medicare services during the period, so we identified who these parties were, the individuals were. And as I understand it, once you can identify those admissions, the data is readily available from the hospital.
Yeah, but without the UB-92, right? See, in your answer to Judge Brown, it seems to me you helped simplify this case enormously, right? Because you said every claim that for which you had one of these numbers for has already been filed, right? The only ones that haven't been are the ones where you don't have the number.
Correct, Your Honor.
So the core, this case, as complicated as it looks when you first look at it, boils down, if we agree with the district judge about, with Judge Kennedy about fair notice, boils down to a very simple fact, it seems to me, which is the agency behaving reasonably when it says you got to have this number on the form? That's what the case seems to need to boil down to.
I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, Your Honor, but part of our case, one of the alternative theories to win this case here was that it wasn't reasonable to require that number when it wasn't made an obligation to the patient to send that number to, or to give that number at the time of presentation. So,
I mean, the department didn't require it.
Correct, and that's part in a way to the.
But if they're requiring claims to be filed on the UB-92, it's pretty obvious that the hospital has to get that information.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Okay. I don't know.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Do you agree that that's what this case is now about? Oh, sorry. Oops.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry. We're waiting for counsel to come.
Now she's there. Okay. Oops. Sorry,
Your Honor. It's okay. So do you agree that that's what this case is now about?
About whether the agency reasonably required HIC numbers?
Well, no, whose responsibility it was, whether or not it was the hospital's responsibility to get this number, and whether they could, in fact, do it.
That's in part what the case is about. I mean, as Your Honor pointed out, like the question of adequate notice as to the requirements is at issue, and that was a point.
No, my question is enveloped in my hypothetical. That is, that you lose on the fair notice point.
Well, yes, Your Honor, I guess then the question would be, is there a way that the hospital could submit this information? And I think to step back a bit, we've used the term HIC number, but perhaps haven't discussed what the number is or what the purpose of it is, and that may shed light on why the agency has that requirement. So the health insurance claim number is the number that establishes that someone is a Medicare beneficiary. So individuals who receive care through managed care plans, there may be many people on the managed care plan. Some are Medicare beneficiaries, some are not. But medical education payments are only available for Medicare beneficiaries. So it's not enough for the agency to know that there were X number of managed care discharges. What the agency wants to know is how many managed care discharges of beneficiaries were there. And the HIC number is the way that the agency knows that the individual is a Medicare beneficiary. And
so who's that's very helpful. I understand that now. But whose responsibility is it? Counsel just said that the cards, these managed care operations, don't have the number on them.
Your Honor, it's the hospital's responsibility to follow through with Your Honor's earlier hypothetical about the 1040. The HIC number can be conceived as something like a Social Security number. When one goes to the hospital or to a doctor, there's any number of pieces of information that the doctor may require in order to treat you. Some of that information may be on your health insurance card, so they Xerox the card, but information that isn't on the card, they ask you to separately provide in a form that you fill out, and that's a condition of your getting treatment. So the provider knows the information that they need to get from you. They consider the documentation you present. If the documentation you present doesn't provide them with all the information,
Then they send them home.
Then they attempt to obtain that information from you before treatment.
And the person won't give it to them?
Well, it seems from the record like Loma Linda did try and obtain numbers from individuals. And again, if those individuals didn't provide those numbers to Loma Linda, that's not the agency's responsibility. Certainly if those individuals had called the agency to say, is it legitimate for a provider to ask me for this information, or why is a provider asking me for this information? But
there's all this anti-fraud effort, et cetera. But let me just be clear, what is your answer to Judge Tatel's question to counsel for the hospitals that were the hospital to prevail on its notice claim, then what can be pursued on remand regarding these HIC numbers?
Well, again, presuming the notice claim, then the question would be really, is the hospital able to provide information to the agency that the agency can reasonably use to process those claims? And then the question there, aside from timeliness, is the feasibility of the method that the hospital proposes. And here the record suggests that we're in a world more analogous to the hypothetical of the spreadsheets or the file room than a 1040 with just the Social Security number missing. And so one important point is that the hospital has pointed out that these UB92 forms are electronically filed, and there were some concerns that they wouldn't be accepted without the HIC number. Now, that is only one aspect of how the UB92 form functions. So with claims that are submitted to managed care organizations, those are also submitted on the UB92 form, and there's going to be a separate code there that says that this is for services from a managed care organization, not medical education payments. But obviously that UB92 form wouldn't need a HIC number because the managed care organization doesn't care whether the person is a Medicare beneficiary. So if those forms were available, UB92 forms lacking only the number, then the agency hasn't been in a position to consider whether they could be processed through the system. But that would be a different situation from the situation of the file room. But what the hospital presented the agency with was the file room. And that's part of why the record doesn't show that the HIC number...
A late application,
Your Honor?
Yeah, it was a late filed claim.
Yes.
Okay, so did you say something really interesting? So you said, I want to make sure I understand what you just said. You said that the agency really hasn't been faced now with the question that I've been asking about, right? That is, whether it could accept UB92s without this number on them.
Correct. Loma Linda never proffered that to the agency, never raised that.
There might be some other way for the agency to ensure if it gets a UB 92 without that, there might be some other simple way for the agency to assure itself, as I understand it, that that's a Medicare recipient, right?
That's correct. That's the key question here. That's the key, and that is not something that Loma Linda ever presented the agency with.
I need to be very clear about that. You're more familiar with the record than I am, but I thought the hospital's Medicare person contacted the agency and was told you cannot submit this form without the HIC number, and then spoke with the financial intermediary, basically said the same thing. So, I mean, I just want to be sure this isn't a fruitless, you know, gesture.
Just to add to what Judge Rogers said, I thought that that the record indicated that technically you couldn't file these, that it's all a computer and the computer won't accept it without the H. You know, it's like trying to get an airline reservation without putting in your credit card. It just won't take it.
Right. Again, what we're talking about presumes that this court has already found there wasn't proper notice. It presumes this court has rejected.
Right. You're not conceding anything, but just assume all of these questions are asked in the context of, were the hospital to prevail on its notice claim, then what happens? And to me, what I'm trying to understand is, with the 1040 form, if I don't have my Social Security number, I can write a government agency, get my Social Security number, and provide it to IRS, or maybe IRS can get it from. What I'm not clear is how you track a HIC number under these managed care situations where the contract doesn't require that the managed care organization include the HIC number in its identification card or some other means.
Again, Your Honor, the record hasn't been developed as to that point. So with all the other information, how the agency would determine whether the individual was a Medicare beneficiary. But I apologize. I think I misunderstood Your Honor's question.
Okay, counsel, thank you very much. Both been very helpful. We'll take the case under advisement.